Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. New SkinGuard Sensitive Razor. The first razor of its kind designed to stop irritation on sensitive skin. Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Thursday, the 14th of November.
Coming up on Game On today, Stephen Kenny's kids keep the show on the road in Armenia.
We're delighted to get the win because we've had a brilliant campaign and we're such a setback in Iceland. We had a defeat that we didn't deserve. It's an important win and puts us good spirits ahead of a big game against Sweden on Tuesday.
Mick McCarthy's men take on the All Whites as Jack Byrne lands his first start for Ireland.
Look, the opportunity comes up and it's something that you can't refuse and you can't turn down when a club like Man City comes calling and they offer you, you know, a 5-year contract. At the age of 14 when we went over, so you know, I was training with the best players, was playing with the best players, you know, I had the best football and education that I probably could have got there.
And we put the focus on Connacht ahead of their return to Champions Cup action.
It's a big league, isn't it? So Montpellier here, they'll be right up for that and they'll probably be watching last week's game and thinking we got a good chance against Connacht.
As always, we want to hear from you. You can get in touch by texting 51552 or tweeting at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
So welcome to Game On with Marie and Donica on this Thursday night. And we do have some live football action tonight because Ireland are playing New Zealand in a friendly.
We owe them one. We owe them one for the rugby. Can we make up for it? 46-14, they hammered us in the rugby. So if we got that scoreline in the soccer tonight, it'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. I don't think it's going to happen, but yeah. Friendlies, Donica. I'm sure you've probably played in many of them yourself. As a player, is it hard to get up for them?
No, it's not. Oh, pre-season friendlies, yes. They're kind of tough, but not an international. I don't even think you can call it that when you play for your country. When you play for Ireland, it's not a friendly. Like, you're shown on a national jersey, your country's jersey, it's the proudest day of your life. So,
what about if it's a country that's ranked way lower than you?
Well, then there's more pressure, though, because, like, we used to, look at your roll in your eyes. But there is, because everyone expects you to beat them, and then it's really difficult. It used to frustrate me because when I was kind of breaking my way into the squad, they were the games, like Troy Parrott and Jack Byrne tonight, they were the games you got your run in. But then the senior players would come in afterwards and they were like, oh, geez, the All Whites were poor enough, weren't they? And you were like, they weren't, they were good. And if you were out there, you wouldn't have done any better. But they're like, yeah, those old friendly. So I think you kind of give them the respect that, you know, they're massive games for everyone. And it's a big game for New Zealand as well. They want to, you know, show what they're about. So always found it, the chance to represent your country at anything, you couldn't call it friendly.
Well, you are right. It is a huge game for New Zealand because their manager, Danny Hay, said that it's a fresh start for them because it's their first game in 17 months.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know what it would be like for players who haven't played for their country in 17 months to go out and play a game together. It'd be difficult.
Yeah, it must be tough. Like, obviously being there before, and it's my first time even hearing New Zealand mentioned with soccer. When you go down there, it's all rugby, obviously, netball, cricket seem to be the sports. They play in rowing, so soccer is down the line. But
like hockey, they've got hockey teams as well.
Okay. Okay, bar hockey, rugby.
Their women's hockey team are very good.
Yeah, but you'd like to see, you're right, when you represent your country, you need more games. And we saw that with the Rugby World Cup. If teams get a chance to play more matches, they get better and they improve. So it's a tough one to get to, though, New Zealand, isn't it? Who would they play against? Like the Aussies?
Yeah.
That's about it.
A lot of their players anyone that's good anyway, will be playing probably in Premier League and Spanish leagues, European football.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Republic of Ireland under-21s got back to winning ways in their European Championship qualifying group today. They beat Armenia in this afternoon thanks to a goal from Zach Albacete. Let's hear from their manager, Stephen Kenny.
I'm very pleased with the win. I think the players really, really worked hard for each other today. Real sense of team, because we had a lot of changes from the previous game and three of the back four making their debuts. The goalkeeper making his debut, Gavin Bazunu, Nathan Collins, Danny McNamara, Thomas O'Connor, all the first under 21 internationals. So when you're putting them together over a couple of days with the Thursday kickoff, the fact that they were so composed, did very well. We sort of had a high pressing game, and that Armenia probably struggled to live with that. Created a lot of chances, and some great chances that we just couldn't take. You think it mightn't be our night, but persistence is important, and we kept going. And Zach Elba said he got the important goal. Then there was a twist, of course, with Darragh O'Shea being sent off, and we're down to 10, so it becomes a squad game then. Players coming off the bench, Liam Scales, Jack Taylor, Aidan Keane making his debut. So we're delighted to get the win, because we've had a brilliant campaign, and then we're such a setback in Iceland. We had a defeat that we didn't deserve, so it was important to bounce back. It was never going to be easy. It's an important win and puts us good spirits ahead of a big game against Sweden on Tuesday.
So that was Republic of Ireland under 21 manager Stephen Kenny speaking after his side beat Armenia this afternoon. Now, as I mentioned, the Republic of Ireland senior team are taking on New Zealand in a friendly in the Aviva Stadium very, very shortly. And our reporter John Kenny is there. John, is there much happening at the Aviva yet?
It's quiet enough. We were talking downstairs to one or two reporters about kind of a crowd we're going to get in tonight. They're talking maybe 15, 18,000, which isn't an awful lot, unfortunately. We know that the New Zealand side haven't played in 18 months. In fact, not so very long ago, they played a friendly against First Division side Cabinteely. So Mick McCarthy has alluded to the fact that he did not know much about New Zealand not so very long ago, in fact, in the build-up to this game. So it comes as no surprise, really, when you consider that they haven't played in 18 months. And the last match they played was in the Oceania World Cup qualifier against Peru, and they lost that 2-0. On aggregate. So, I say, not a lot known about them. Winston Reid, perhaps their best known player, he's their captain tonight and he plays with West Ham. But it's a very unknown side, and a very young side that Mick McCarthy's put out against them tonight as well.
JK, it's always hard when the opposition, people mightn't know a whole lot about them, but what would Mick McCarthy hope for his team tonight?
Well, as we mentioned, he has put out a very, very young squad team, as we know, the likes of Celtic's Leo Connor. Leo Connor has not made a full competitive start for Celtic, never mind playing for the Republic of Ireland. He's winning his, making his debut tonight from right back. He's got the likes of Derek Williams, with only four caps to his name. Kieran Clark and Kevin Long, a bit more experience in the centre of the back four. The midfield would be Alan Brown alongside Josh Cullen and Jack Byrne in midfield from Shamrock Rovers. Sean Maguire, Robbie Brady starting the other side of Troy Parrott. The goalkeepers, Burton Albion's Kieran O'Hara, who's on loan from Manchester United. So he has publicly stated that he is not really looking at bringing any of those players through to play on Monday, which is the big one against Denmark. Although maybe, just maybe, Robbie Brady, if he fires on all cylinders tonight, might be a consideration for Monday's game. But we still think that McCarthy is very loyal to his players. So it's likely that Conor Hourihan, along with Glenn Whelan and Jeff Hendrick, will form that midfield trio again, because he likes that trio in midfield.
John, one thing, though, that the Republic of Ireland team seem to lack is somebody to score a lot of goals. So what happens if Troy Parrott goes out there tonight and hits the net a couple of times? Does he by any way force his way into Mick McCarthy's plans?
I don't know. It depends on Mick's loyalty, you know, Marie. He does like to regard himself as very loyal to his players. So, you know, he did say in the press conferences, I hope he does, you know, score three or four goals tonight, and he will come into his consideration. But I think that's for another day. I think really Mick is concentrated fully on Monday and playing the players that he thinks can deliver. Now, we haven't delivered. We've only picked up 2 points out of a possible nine in their last three games as well, which isn't good enough. And we know that Denmark, along with Switzerland, were the two top teams in the group. The Swiss, probably the strongest team. Got a fortuitous back-to-the-wall performance against Denmark in the first match, and Richard Keogh scored that late goal. But it's been a group that everybody's been drawing with each other, so we're now down to the last game. We don't want to drag this out. If we can beat Denmark, get through, get it done and dusted, if we don't, we're going to be then into this Nations League playoff stuff in March, and we don't want to go down that route particularly. So I think he's just concentrating fully on Monday and tonight, just giving youth his chance.
Okay, John, well, we will check back in with you later on. That game is live on RTÉ2 television and on RTÉ Radio 1 Extra, where John will be commentating. Now, John was saying that it'll be hard for people to force their way into the plans, Donegal, but someone who definitely will want to and will look at tonight as being such a huge honour for him and his family is Shamrock Rovers player Jack Byrne, who's been having a brilliant year since he's returned home. Let's hear from him.
When I came home with an open mind. I never would have imagined that the year would have gone as well as it has. obviously playing for Ireland and winning the Cup of Rovers and getting the individual award as well for Player of the Year was unbelievable. So look, it's been a year to remember, and hopefully can have a few more. It was an easy decision for me because the position I was in at the time, I wasn't playing. I just wanted to get back out onto the pitch, and I knew coming home to Shamrock Rovers and working with Stephen Bradley and Steve McPhail and Glenn Cronin and, you know, all these people at Shamrock Rovers, I knew it would be a good fit for me. So being able to see my family every day for the first time since I was probably 14 years of age when I moved over to Man City was different, but I loved it. You know, I'm enjoying every minute being home, and we think it's tough for any young Irish kid going across the water. But look, the opportunity comes up, and it's something that you can't refuse and you can't turn down when a club like Man City comes calling and they offer you, you know, a 5-year contract at the age of 14 when we went over. So, you know, I was training with the best players, I was playing with the best players. You know, I had the best football and education that I probably could have got there. So, you know, I worked under some unbelievable managers, Patrick Vieira, Manuel Pellegrini, Pep Guardiola, like, you know, to learn from these people was unbelievable. Yeah, I think it was the ones that the fans wanted as well. I think if you had asked them at the start of the year, you know, what would they have brought out, the league or the cup, I'm sure most of them would have said the cup. And just to have the day out with the fans, you know, at the Aviva, I think there must have been 20,000 Rovers fans there. So it was an unbelievable day. And look, the best way to win is penalties and probably the worst way to lose. So look, we'll take it. No, I'm just trying to do as well as I can. And if we go out and play well, I'm sure, you know, the manager will notice that, and I'm just trying to go out there and give myself the best chance to, you know, hopefully be in his thoughts anyways.
Now, that was Jack Byrne there, and he is making his very first start for the Republic of Ireland team. Troy Parrott is also going to be playing for Ireland tonight. He is making his debut, and he is a former Belvedere player, and we managed to track down his coach, Dara O'Reilly, who joins us on the line. Dara, how are things?
Not bad, Marie. Thank you.
Thanks for coming on. It's a huge night for the club. I'm guessing you're going to the match, are you?
I am. I'm actually parked not far from the ground now. Just on my way in.
Fantastic.
Dara, must be an incredibly proud moment for you, though. Like, obviously, he's been outstanding at an underage level, but to see him run now for the national team.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be a proud moment for not only himself, but his family and anyone who knows him, to be honest. Not just the club, but people around, the family, friends. It's an incredible achievement, and especially when you look at the fact that he's now going to be third on the list of youngest ever Irish internationals. It's huge for himself at just 17 years of age, and it's a credit to all the work he's done over the years.
So tell us, Dara, you coached him from when he was 10 till he was 15. What was he like?
To be honest, he was just a normal kid. He was just a lovely kid, very genuine. Always polite, mannerly with anybody that he came across. He would have been, I suppose, quietish. Not that he was shy or introverted, but he wouldn't be a loud yapper around the place. But when he did speak, it was generally a funny one-liner or something similar. But he was really popular with all his teammates. Spoken of very highly by all his coaches, and I think that probably tells you, you know, the best about him, really, that he's appreciated by the other players. And I think it's always very good.
Absolutely. Winning players' respect is always a must, and he's certainly doing that in Spurs. But for people that wouldn't know a whole lot about him, what's his point of difference? What can we look out for tonight that Troy brings that makes him unique?
I think, first and foremost, it's probably the position that he plays in. I saw an interview he did yesterday with the FAI, and he alluded to it himself, that anyone who can score goals in the game is always going to be highly appreciated. And he's had that knack really from a young age. He's a very intelligent footballer and links very well with his teammates. And he just has a natural sort of ability. Whether that's with his right foot, his left foot, his head, he would have scored a lot of headed goals in schoolboy football, which is not too common. But he's got that kind of single-minded focus, particularly when he gets played in front of goal, that he'll put it away. And, you know, that's what the game is all about.
And that's what we need, Dara. We need somebody to score goals.
We do.
So when he was a kid, like, tell us what, like, could you tell that he had this brilliant potential and that he could would or could perhaps go on and reach the heights that he's almost reaching now?
Well, I suppose you never really know for certain. I mean, particularly at the very start when he was, whatever he was, 9 or 10, and he's just like any of the other players, that he's there first and foremost because he loves football. And he, to be honest, he's still like that now. He just loves playing football. If you told him that he could play 3 matches in a row, he'd do it. But when he was younger, like you could see that he had ability. And as the years went by, I suppose it showed a little bit more, and then he started getting into his teenage years and he was shining within his own team. And then he was being recognised by league representative squads, and eventually then the English clubs and the Irish squads, and it just kind of progressed from there. And Austin Skelly, who would have run the team alongside me for the few years, we would have maybe had private conversations among ourselves about not just Troy but the others, and kind of where we could maybe see them going or how we could see them developing. And I suppose we would have had that private hope that he might be able to go on and have a professional career and maybe play for Ireland, but it's such a fickle game, you never really know. So the fact that he's now doing it at 17 years of age, starting in the Aviva, it's just an incredible achievement, really.
And what's it mean to the club? Obviously, we spoke about his friends and family, but around the club there now, when young players see there's someone that's been in their ranks and around their environment, that he's made it.
Yeah, well, I suppose he'd probably say himself, like, he hasn't made it yet. He's a very down-to-earth kid. And something that kind of always stood out about him, if you asked him about a game he played with Ireland or Spurs or whatever, he'd always give you an honest assessment. But within the club, I suppose Belvedere has done so well over the years with different players like Wesley Houlihan and many more before him to go on to big heights. So young players at the club have always had role models as such. But I know even while Troy was still here, he was almost like a celebrity among the youngest players in the club, because his name was starting to become known, and the fact that he's from around the North Inner City as well, where a lot of the players would have come from, he just kind of nearly took on that star status, and he really kind of stood up to it. And you know, at different times with events that were running for, you know, the under 8 or younger, he would have come along and helped me coaching, or would have come along just to kind of say hello to the lads. And I think he's looked upon now as a role model. One of the recent under 21 games in Tala, I actually saw on the TV a big group of kids with Belvo tops on them after the match, getting them to sign their t-shirts and God knows what. So yeah, he is. He's a role model for the club, and it's great that the club has so many of them over the years.
Already there's comparisons with Robbie Keane, with Harry Kane, like these are big name players, and with that I'm sure comes pressure. How will he handle it?
I think he'll handle it quite well, to be honest. He's, like I said, he's not the loudest personality around the place, but he's quietly confident. And to be honest, everything that he's done up to now, and it's been a meteoric rise for him. The fact that he's not 18 until the start of February next year. So he's taken everything in his stride up to now. Whether that was first getting the recognition from his league, and then when the club started becoming interested. And I remember myself and Austin, who ran the team, going to their house to speak with Troy and his mum when the real interest started kind of building up. And you know, I think it's hard to put yourself in that situation as a 13, 14-year-old when there's all this attention coming on you, and I suppose a lot of pressure that goes with it. And then in the last few years, people talking about him and building him up, as you said, as the next this and the next that. And he's just a level-headed kid, and he always has been. He has this great quality of just taking a game like any other game. I know from speaking to him even last year before different games where he travelled with the first team for, you know, the first few times at 16, and you know, to him, although he'll get the normal nerves, he takes things in his stride, and once he's out there, he kind of just blossoms. So I wouldn't have too much worry about him, and the fact that he's dealt with that hype and attention up to now, and said himself that he just doesn't pay attention to it, and I think that's the best way to be.
Yeah, Dara, we hope he puts in a great performance tonight and that you're so proud of him and that everywhere in Belvedere and FC can enjoy Troy putting in a massive performance for Ireland. Best of luck to him. We'll take a quick break. 2FM.
Game on 2FM.
With Gillette, new skin guard sensitive with unique skin guard technology taking the pressure off the blades and your shave. Say bye to shave irritation. Gillette, the best a man can get.
Text 51552.
Game on. Weekdays from 6.
Okay, welcome back to Game On. This Sunday, Connacht take a return to Champions Cup action when they take on Montpellier. Sometimes, Marie, we don't give Connacht enough focus, and I think it's really important that we start to hone in on them a little bit more. They're back in Champions Cup, and we're delighted to be joined by Gavin Duffy. Duffer, how are you?
How are you going on, Delica? Are you well?
I'm great. Yourself?
Great, thanks.
Gavin, we were just chatting about it there. Sometimes Connacht don't get the attention they deserve, but when you're at the top table playing Champions Cup rugby week in, week out, then you get the columns, the inches in the paper, and in your new role with commercial marketing and development, you know, brand awareness, everything steps up a little bit more. This is where Connacht need to be, isn't it?
Yeah, without doubt, Duncan. I think on the last two occasions where we've got into the Champions Cup, we've qualified by merit. Obviously, the first two occasions we relied on Leinster winning the Champions Cup to get us, you know, kind of a spot in there. So we've missed not being in it for the last three seasons, and you can certainly feel a big shift. You know, you would have felt it yourself back in the day when it goes from a Pro 14 game and you rock in on a Monday for a Champions Cup game. You can feel it, the different mood, different atmosphere, and certainly everyone's looking forward to a big game on Sunday against a quality Montpellier side, it has to be said.
What does it mean when you're not in it, just in terms of like the commercial side of things and the fans and just the brand in general?
I think the biggest aspect of it is probably just not being on TV. You know, that the all European games are carried live across so many different channels now, and that's probably the biggest loss in terms of people coming through the gates. Obviously, you do expect a bigger turnout for the, I suppose, the glamorous teams that you do welcome to the Sports Ground, Montpellier, Toulouse and Gloucester on this occasion. But funny enough, last year, being in the Challenge Cup, you know, we still got great attendances. The teams, Connacht themselves, were playing really good rugby. They were playing winning rugby. I think they turned the Sports Ground into a bit of a fortress over the last 18 months. And people came to watch it. You know, it wasn't the glamour tie of a Champions Cup game, but we still got big crowds for Bordeaux and La Rochelle and Gloucester over the last couple of seasons. Sale that we've had, you know, still big teams, and you can see them now. All those teams are going pretty well in their own domestic leagues over the last 24 months as well. So I think not being on TV is probably the biggest drawback. You know, that brings its own kind of hype as well, and kind of puts you into the homes of people who might necessarily have Connacht to the forefront of their mind all the time. So that's probably the biggest loss, but thanks to your fans, have been brilliant over the last couple of seasons, and you know, they appreciate when the team are playing good rugby and they'll turn up to watch them no matter who they're playing.
There must be a huge buzz now around the city and the ground and just people that you meet, everybody looking forward to the weekend.
Yeah, and I think we've seen that over the last couple of weeks. Look, there's no doubt that Rugby World Cup had a big impact on domestic rugby, not just here in Ireland and the Pro 14, but you know, you see it in the Premiership and possibly the Top 14 in France, where the focus, rightly so, it's on a competition that only comes around once every 4 years, and there's some quality matches going on every Saturday and Sunday, and it's very hard for I know myself, when I was on the couch for the best part of 2 or 4 hours on a Saturday morning trying to keep the kids entertained, and then, you know, to say, right, I'm going off now to work to watch Connacht play a match, it's a full day of rugby. So I had the excuse that it was work. I was going to watch Connacht play on a Saturday after watching 2 or 3 World Cup matches. So it did take a bit of the spotlight off the Pro 14. But I think we've seen it as of last week with the Interpros. Obviously, Munster taking on Ulster and Connacht and Leinster. We saw a huge crowd in the Sports Ground. So, thankfully, provincial rugby and club rugby is back in the focus of everyone. And again, Champions Cup is brilliant to have right in the doorstep now as well.
But you must take a bit of a bow for that as well, Gavin. You've done a great job off the field. Like, not being harsh, but it was always an intimidating place to go due to the conditions and the pitch or the environment. But now it's tough on it. You're right. The Sports Ground really is a fortress now, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think if you look back over the last 18 months in particular, it's Leinster that we've lost on two occasions and Munster last Christmas as well, and on all three occasions, you have to say we were beaten by the better side. Leinster, obviously, you know, up there with Saracens as the two best sides consistently over the last couple of years. And Munster, as we know, like it's a huge derby game as well against Munster, and they came out with a very strong side last Christmas, and you know, they played the better rugby on the night. And kind of have to think, bounce back on all three occasions from that and learnt a lot. And I think even last Friday night they would have learnt a lot from that first 40 minutes as well, in terms of that's exactly where you need to be when you're playing the best teams in terms of level of intensity. You know, that the international guys certainly brought back into that Leinster team last Friday night. So look, the rugby has come on leaps and bounds over the last couple of years in Connacht. You know, the professional side has obviously gone well. That there was a catapult or the springboard of winning the Pro 14 back in 2016 that really aided us to get out right across the province, and it's had its effect, you know, grassroots and the growth of the games. We see offshoots of, say, Ballina Rugby Club now is offshoots of Swinford, and Cross Minor getting mini rugby up and running on a Saturday morning because the numbers travelling in from those teams, from those towns into Ballina, warranted that they no longer had two buses going in, that they set up their own mini rugby club in those areas. And we've seen it grow right across the province in that regard, and thankfully it's beginning to filter through to the squad as well. You know, regularly now we've seen 12 to 15 players in the match day 23 coming through the academy. Now, not all of those are I suppose right through the grassroots. We still have one or two guys coming in from Munster and Leinster, but even this weekend, you know, we'll see probably four out of the five counties of the province represented. We'll have, you know, two or three from Mayo, two or three from Galway, two from Roscommon for sure, and a couple from Sligo, I'd imagine, would be involved this weekend as well. So you can see right across the province now we're seeing guys who have the, I suppose, the pathway laid out in front of them in terms of if you want to achieve your dreams and fulfil your dreams of playing rugby at the very, very highest level, be it in the Champions Cup or for Ireland, that's the pathway now in place in the province. And for me, that's incredible to see, and I'm incredibly proud of, I suppose, the work that Connacht Rugby has been doing from the grassroots up.
We're taking game on the road, Gavin, in the next few weeks, so by the sounds of that, we should definitely get down to Connacht, Donnacha.
Oh, you'd be always welcome. Always welcome.
You're always welcome, bar 80 minutes. That's what I always notice about going for the...
It's a road show, Donnacha. Yeah. You'll be fine.
But just on...
We put on the kettle for you in that instant, but it's always the way, Donnacha. I think, you know, even last Friday, you could see people... And players across all four provinces saying we're playing against our mates, but that doesn't hold them back for the 80 minutes. That's the crack. That's the, you know, you want to be tested, and there is nothing better than testing yourself against your neighbours. And as I said, there was, you know, I'm sure the guys up in Ulster and the more than the guys here, kind of, there's a bit of hurt pride when you don't come out with the right results on a Friday or Saturday against your nearest and dearest when they kind of dusted you up a bit. So you know, you see a backlash, as you're going to show, from both of those sides, but. You know, you learn from the best around, and we're kind of quite fortunate that one of the best teams in Europe is Leinster, because they keep the bar high for everyone else in Ireland. No more so than Munster, when they were riding high, did the same, you know.
But they also show the vulnerabilities for your opposition. So you've Montpellier this weekend. I've no doubt they'll look back over those videos. You've seen their pack. You've seen the massive set of men they have, even within their backs. Like, Andy Friend will have his work cut out if they put in a tight performance like they did last Friday night.
Oh, without doubt, Donnacha. Like, and I think it's the longest week you can possibly have as well between professional games. You know, you play on a Friday night and you don't play again then until the following Sunday week, and off the back of a loss, that is an eternity. You know, you love to go out, you know, you play a Friday night, you love to right the wrongs the very next day. So they've had to wait a long week to kind of put things right come Sunday against Montpellier. So I'm sure they would have identified a lot of the key areas. I think certainly, like, Leinster were very, very good. I thought they were excellent in that first half. They were played with such intensity, they were hitting the ball at 100 miles an hour. But I think from Connacht's point of view, they will look at, not okay, that's grand, Leinster were very good, but lads, we made them look good on occasions too. You know, I think the tackle rate was still over 92%. They had the best tackle rate across the whole Pro 14, but it was how effective were those tackles. You know, were Leinster still getting offloads? Yeah, they were. Were they still getting quick ball? Yes, they were. So that's the key area I think Connacht will focus in on this week, because, as you said, Donnacha, they're massive men. They've got not just that, but they've got quality as well. Like, you know, there's just literally with South Africans from the Duplessis in the front row and Georgians in the front row to World Cup winners and Andre Pollard coming back from the World Cup with South Africa. You've got Aaron Cruden, who's won the World Cup twice. You've got John Deaton, who's another South African international. Francois Steyn, who won the World Cup twice and just come back. You know, they're littered with internationals and big men right across the field. So Connacht will have to literally put their bodies in front, put them on the line, and that was the element I'd imagine they'll discuss most from their defeat to Leinster.
Absolutely, and no better man for it than Ulton Deland. Great news that he's back in the squad, but there's also good news. Gavin, you know better than anyone, when players start signing on, it builds momentum. Having a captain like Jared Butler, Tiernan O'Halloran, Sean O'Brien, all signing contracts saying, this is my club, I want to go forward with Connacht.
Yeah, and that's hugely important. Again, you know, if you do look backwards and kind of say, well, where have Connacht come from? I mean, that's a vital cog of it, Donica, that we're retaining players. We're retaining the players that are shining, that it's no longer a stepping stone or a place where you can resurrect your career. It's a place where you go and you can shine and continue to shine. I think that's, again, as I said, referencing back to a couple of other years where players have come or players have got to a level and then they feel they have to springboard off to another province or another club to further their career. So over the last few years, like, we've seen guys coming through like Finlay Beelam, Ulton Deland, as you mentioned, who's been outstanding for Connacht over the last couple of years. Kieran Marnion, Jack Carty, Tiernan O'Halloran, Mead Alokun, Matt Healy, all have got capped. Quinn Rue has progressed his career as well. All these guys got capped whilst at Connacht, and traditionally we would have lost those guys within a year or 2 years, but we've, as you said, we've re-signed all those, Jared Butler as well, and again, that's a clear sign that they enjoy the environment, they enjoy the coaching they're getting, they believe they're getting great coaching, and they believe that there is togetherness within the squad to stick together and hopefully achieve success on the field, and success for them is obviously winning trophies, which some guys have already achieved that, so it's great to see that their ambition is still there.
It's hard to ask you, and I know the way we'll get it, but can you give us a prediction, scoreline, how do you think the game will go?
It's very tough. I think if you look at Montpellier, I think they're seventh in the league at the moment. They could be easily third if they'd won one of their two drawn games against Toulon and Bordeaux. They could easily be third in the league, but it's their away form. Again, Donica, you know the French teams, what way will they turn up? They haven't won away from home, obviously, so far this year, but with the amount of quality they have and the influx of foreigners, never mind the French internationals they have in terms of Picamole and these guys, Benjamin Fall, I think even if they do turn up, I think Connacht would have learned so much from last Friday night against, you know, one of the top two teams in Europe in Leinster. I think they'll have learned a lot about themselves and where they need to be every single week, especially in these big weeks against the top teams in Europe. And I think Connacht will turn up this Friday, or this Sunday, should I say. They'll turn up on Friday. I hope they turn up on Sunday too. But I think they will turn up on Sunday. I think there'll be a big crowd as well as a sports fan on Sunday to see that. And I think for themselves, they'll want to show that last Friday, especially in that first 40 minutes, was a blip so far in the season. So I expect a big performance from Connacht, and we've turned over some big teams in the sports ground over the last couple of years, especially in Heineken Cup when we've had the chance with Toulouse and Ross, and I think I'm hopeful that this will be another big occasion and a good performance and hopefully the right result then on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely, and we know better than anyone the importance of the crowd. It's Sunday at 1 p.m. against Montpellier. Gavin, thanks very much for joining us. It's great to see Connacht back at the top table. Let's hope they push on. We're going to take a quick break.
FM. Game on 2FM.
With Gillette Skin Guard Sensitive, the first razor of its kind designed to stop skin irritation. Revolutionary technology, taking the pressure off the blades and your shave. Gillette, the best a man can get. There's a man open left.
Game on, Iron America.
Welcome back to Game On with Marie and Donica. Now it is time for our Eye in America, and we're joined once again by Jeff Shepherd. Jeff, how are things?
Oh, things are going great. How are things in Ireland?
Oh, things are great, besides the weather, as always. Now, Jeff, last week we were a little bit mean to you when we played Sweet Home Alabama, so you know what's coming.
I'm going back.
Chef, congratulations. You got the big win.
Thank you. Yes. That's why Andrew O'Connor is the king. we talked obviously previewing the game last weekend, the big college football game between number two LSU, number three Alabama in Tuscaloosa. And, I mean, it really was, I mean, it lived up to all of the hype. I mean, you know, so often, you know, a lot of sporting events don't. But this one really came down to the final minutes. You know, the Tigers jumped out to a 20-point lead at the half, and Alabama just slowly fought back all in the second half, but LSU was able to withstand it. And had got a couple of late touchdown drives to. They never relinquished the lead, but just a phenomenal, phenomenal football game. And the LSU quarterback, Joe Burrow, pretty much, you know, as of today, would be your Heisman Trophy winner, which is, you know, the award given out to the best player in college football. So just a phenomenal football game. And look, yes, I'm partial, obviously, but I mean, you know, I just, the world just seems a little bit brighter when LSU beats Alabama. I don't know what that is.
Shep, there was 101,821 people at that game.
Yeah.
That is phenomenal, isn't it?
That's mad.
Yeah, people literally just hang it from the rafters. And you know, the thing that you have to realize too is, I mean, again, you said it, that's just the folks at the game. There's easily, I would assume, another 20,000 to 30,000 people around the stadium tailgating and hanging out all day that didn't have tickets, but they were still on campus. And so, I mean, you know, that's a pretty large city that you're talking about there with 130,000 people. So, it was clearly the marquee game, the marquee sporting event, I think, in America last weekend. And again, it just really lived up to the hype.
And it certainly did with the scoreline, 46-41. It was an incredible match.
Yeah, typically, you know, it's funny. Typically, these schools have been some of the best on defense and have got just dozens of defensive players in the National Football League. But the defense was in short order last weekend. I mean, the offenses really just kind of went all over the place. Both quarterbacks threw for, you know, nearly 400 yards, and I think each team had a running back gain 100 yards and scored multiple touchdowns. So it was exciting. It took like 4.5 hours to play. But it was, again, if you're in purple and gold or you just don't like Alabama, it was well worth it.
Donald Trump was there as well. How was he received?
He was, you know, cheered when he was there. You know, it's interesting. He's kind of going to a couple of different sporting events in the last month, and he's going to a UFC fight, and he's going to a World Series game, and now he's going to this LSU-Alabama football game. And the reaction, I would say, was probably mixed in the stadiums the first few times. I think he was clearly liked more, you know, down in Alabama. I mean, that's a conservative southern state. And so the other places were in, you know, I think D.C. and I think in maybe Los Angeles. I'm not exactly sure where the UFC fight was, but it was in a bigger city. And so, you know, those would typically be a little bit more progressive, a little bit more democratic leaning. And so, you know, a little mixture of cheers and boos in those two places. But overwhelmingly, I think he was cheered in Alabama.
I know, Shep, that you were watching it with your family. Did you celebrate for days afterwards, or did you have to go back to work?
Unfortunately, I did have to go back to work on Monday. But it was amazing the amount of people in the office who came by to tell me congratulations. Like, I had anything to do with it. but I would gladly take it. So it's been a good week, yes.
We're going to move on now to Colin Kaepernick, because he is in the news again, this time because he has been invited to work out for clubs to evaluate him. Can you tell us a little bit about what this means for him?
Yeah, so this is kind of a weird one. And the details actually are still emerging on what exactly is going to take place. This is what we know so far. The NFL is holding an open workout session for Colin Kaepernick on Saturday. They don't know exactly how many teams are going to be there. It's going to be in Atlanta. They don't know exactly who he's going to be throwing to or kind of what the agenda is going to be. Don't know how long it's going to last. And it's kind of odd that it's being held on a Saturday, because if you think about it, half the teams are going to be playing a home game in the NFL. And so they're going to probably be going to their hotels and getting ready for the, you know, they all stay in hotels the night before. And then the other half of the teams are either traveling or going to be practicing or getting ready, you know, for the game the next day. So it's an odd time. I mean, in the way the NFL works is on Tuesdays, you know, players are typically off on Tuesdays. And so that would have seemed the most logical day of the week to have an event like this, or even next Saturday. I mean, this all kind of came out earlier this week. I mean, teams are having like 3, maybe 4 days to scramble and figure out if they're going to get somebody there. Now, John Elway, you know, Super Bowl champion for the Denver Broncos and owner of Broncos, says they're going to send a representative down there. I think the Washington Redskins and the Miami Dolphins have all said they're planning on the. I mean, obviously, teams that are having struggles with quarterbacks would be the most interested in sending him there. But, you know, one one ESPN commentator basically said, as long as he doesn't show up and, you know, can't throw the football, or if he can't keep his mouth shut, he'll have a job next week. So this is, you know, far from over, and it'll be interesting to see kind of how this develops. But even though he's getting this workout, there's still a lot of questions about why the NFL is doing this and what exactly is going to happen.
How long has he missed?
So he's been out of the league for 2 to 3 years now. I want to say the protest started in 2016. And because I know they were part of a lot of the election rhetoric that was going on back then. And so, you know, he's been out of the league for 2 years or so. Now, some of the other players that have joined him in protest have since gotten back, you know, into the quote-unquote good graces of the league and of some teams. But he has been the only one that has not been involved in professional football since this all started in sometime in 2016.
Chef, do you think he has a future in American football?
So, again, I think this comes talent-wise. I think he should. I don't understand why he would. You know, there are a lot of guys that are starting quarterbacks right now in the NFL that will never have put up career numbers that he has put up. I mean, he's you know, led a team to the Super Bowl and almost won one in New Orleans. You know, a couple of years ago, he's been to the playoffs several times. He's an athletic quarterback. The issue is, and you know, part of some of the things that he's brought up is, you know, is the league colluding against him to keep him out? You know, or was there a mandate sent out to the owners to have him not involved in football? I just don't know how much of an appetite a lot of these owners are going to have for a guy who, look, for better or worse, you have to admit, he's going to come in and he's going to have a bullseye on his back for a variety of different reasons. And NFL owners are typically, you know, not looking to attract attention, especially negative attention, to their football teams. So, again, I don't know. I don't know if he's going to be able to be as outspoken as he's been in the past and have a spot in the NFL. I mean, he was playing in San Francisco, obviously, a very liberal, very progressive city, and, you know, saying some of the things that he was saying. That stuff doesn't play in Green Bay. It doesn't probably play in Kansas City. It doesn't play in, you know, some of these other, you know, Midwestern towns, you know, across the country. And I think a lot of that stuff has to get factored into it. I don't know how much he even wants to continue. Not that he doesn't still believe what he believes, but how much is he going to use his position to, you know, to amplify what he's trying to say? He might just want to get back to playing football, and if that means he needs to be quiet for a year or two, he might do that and then pick up the calls again. I just don't know. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Again, this is far from being settled.
Yeah, and you can obviously see quarterbacks can play till quite old, but he's 32 years of age, Shep. Do you think he wants to get back out playing?
I think a big part of that is he probably misses the game and misses his teammates and misses being a part of, you know, the game and the league. You know, you just said, I mean, Tom Brady, his trainer came out earlier today and said, you know, Brady wants to play till he's 47. I mean, that'd be like another 5 years or 5 or 6 years of him playing in the league. So for Kaepernick, you're talking like 15 years. I mean, so I don't know. I just don't know what the appetite is going to be for a team, again, to take him. And here's a perfect example. A couple of examples. Eric Reed was on the 49ers with him, and he had done a lot of the kneeling and protesting as well. He has, you know, since gotten back into the good graces of the league, and he plays for the Carolina Panthers. Michael Bennett, famously outspoken. He was in Seattle, kneeling. He was in New England, kneeling. He got traded to the Dallas Cowboys. He's been standing on the sideline from the national anthem for the last 2 weeks. So, again, it has a lot to do with the team that you would go to, the discussions that you're going to have with that ownership group, with the general manager, with the head coach. What are they going to be comfortable with you doing? And I don't know if we can answer those questions right now. It's going to depend on how he looks in this workout and who might be interested in him and who needs quarterback help.
Shep, thanks very much. We'll catch up with you next week. Hope you can enjoy the celebrations. Well done.
Appreciate it. Go Tigers.
Thanks, Shep. Now to some breaking news. Horse Racing Ireland confirmed today that all registrations of horses under the Supreme Horse Racing Club banner have been voided following the failure of the club's trustee to provide HRI with information requested. It means that Supreme Horse Racing Club will not be permitted to be owners or part-time owners of racehorses registered under rules in Ireland. We are joined on the line by journalist Don McLean. Don, we've spoken about this a little while ago, but this is another significant development. Just tell us what's happened.
Yeah, that's right, Marie. We spoke about it back a few weeks ago when Horse Racing Ireland suspended the owners, the ability for Supreme Racing to make entries for their horses. But I suppose this is a step further. And yeah, look, it's been ongoing for a little while. On the Horse Racing Ireland release today, they kind of detailed the chronology of it, and I suppose they had their first meeting with the Supreme Racing people back at the end of July. And there were kind of complaints from members before then, but no, it's reached the zenith now, and it's unfortunate, really, because they've got so many good horses in training, and from a racing perspective, you just want to see these horses running. And I'm sure for the members of Supreme Racing Club as well, it's desperate news for them. They have part ownerships or legs in these horses, and they can't run. And so no, it's at an impasse now, and it's difficult to know where it's going to move forward now.
So what do you imagine will happen with these horses? Will they change ownership?
You just don't know, Marie. Like it's going back. Like there was quiet earlier in the summer, and HRI, they met with Steve Matthew, who's the head of Supreme Racing, and they wanted more documentation, I suppose details of the membership and of the ownerships of the horses, more detailed memberships. And I think that they say in their statement that they were due to have another meeting on the 4th of November, but that didn't happen. And there was no explanation forthcoming, and they sought more documentation. That wasn't forthcoming either. So I suppose, from HRI's perspective, having suspended the owner's registration back in at the end of October, in the 22nd of October, this is another step forward now, where they've actually voided the registration of horses, or as you say, the Supreme Racing Club's ability to either own or part-own horses racing under the rules in Ireland. So, I suppose the most high-profile horse is Ken Boy. He's the highest-rated chaser in training, and he's the Pointestown Gold Cup winner from last year. We're, looking forward to seeing where he was going to go. He did hold an entry in the championship at Downroyal there a few weeks ago, but whether that was or wasn't his intended target to come back, he wasn't able to run there. So the national hunt season is going on, and still Ken Boy at the moment, he's not able to run, he can't be entered. And it's not just Ken Boy, it's like other good, or like Cadmium, he won the Topham Trophy last year at Aintree, he's Supreme Racing sub horse as well. Aramon, a grade one winning hurdler, novice hurdler from last season, he can't run. Robin DiCarlo, there are lots of high profile horses that you just want to see running, and unfortunately at the moment they can't run.
Don, I know before you mentioned to me that this was unprecedented, and it's hard to try and even figure out what could happen next. What do you think will happen?
I've no idea, Marie. I have no idea. Like whether, I don't know, the horses can be, HRI said that it's down to now the members to go and figure it out. So that the club is registered for racing purposes with the HRI, but I think the actual ownership of the horses, that's a civil matter, private to parties. So while the club is registered with HRI, they don't have any say over the degree to which each horse is owned by each individual member. That's for the club itself to sort out, and obviously that's not sorted out at the moment. So yeah, it's difficult to know. Like, God, you want to for the members as well, who do have part ownership, or each individual member has part ownership of each horse. They obviously want to see the horses running, and they can't run now. So, there are no winners as far as I can see, Marie, at the minute. The trainer as well, Willie Munt, he can't run his horses. Really good, top-class horses that he has. The racing public is deprived of seeing these horses run. So, there are no winners that I can see.
OK, Don, we will be talking racing with you and Jane tomorrow, so no doubt we will have more on that. Thanks for joining us. Now it is time to head for the newsroom, but first this ad. 2FM.
Game on 2FM. With Gillette Skin Guard Sensitive, the first razor of its kind designed to stop irritation on sensitive skin. So say bye-bye to shave irritation and razor bumps. Gillette, the best a man can get.
Text 51552.
Game on. Weekdays from 6.
Welcome back to Game On with Marie and Donica. We are looking at Tony O'Donoghue on the television screen and it looks...
He's a handsome man.
It looks absolutely Baltic. It looks
cold.
Baltic down at the Aviva Stadium.
That's just his hair.
We are going to cross over there now because Alan Cawley and Kenny Cunningham are standing by. Lads, are you freezing? Kenny, are you freezing down there?
They're so cold they can't talk. Alan, are you all right? Are you a snowman? They're gone away off.
Alan, how are you? Can you hear me down there?
Yeah, can you hear me, Marie?
Oh, there he is. Alan, how are you getting on? You're frozen.
I'm not too bad, Donica. I'm well wrapped up. Don't worry about that. Hats, gloves, scarf, the whole lot.
Have you the turtleneck on?
No, not tonight, but I have plenty of layers on. It is very cold, but it's a nice night for football. Don't believe all you read about these soft footballers. There's plenty of hardy bucks amongst us. Don't worry about that, Donica.
Absolutely. I wouldn't cross you.
Kenny, we were having a chat earlier about friendlies, and Donica reckons that if you're pulling on a jersey for your country, it's never a friendly. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's, you have to have that kind of mentality, Marie. You know, regardless of the occasion, many people are inside the stadium. I think your focus, your train of thought before the game has to be the game means everything, and it should do. It's international football. You're playing for your country, and I think there is actually some significance. I think there's always significance to games, even friendly internationals, as this one will be pitched this evening. But coming so close to the game in a couple of days against Denmark, I think it does matter. It matters for a number of these players. Maybe not potentially in terms of getting the starting place in the game Monday, although you never know. But certainly pushing themselves into the mindset of the manager, whether it's a place on the bench or maybe if it's a case of as an impact player Monday evening, if Mick looks to the bench and looking for a player to change the dynamic of the game, then these players can put themselves into the mindset of the manager with a performance tonight.
And Alan, it's a massive opportunity for fellas, isn't it?
Well, absolutely, Donica, yeah. I would agree totally with Kenny. Every game is important, especially when you're representing your country. And tonight will be no different. And especially with the lads, there's a bit of excitement, obviously, around a couple of the young lads who we're going to play tonight, Leo Connor, Troy Parrott. And we've obviously heard plenty about the future stars and the under-21 team at the moment. And I know they had another victory today. But this is the natural progression for a couple of those lads. Also, you have Robbie Brady coming back into the reckoning, who people think if he was to put in a performance tonight, maybe he could play his way into the team for Monday. I'm not so sure about that, but he could certainly play his way into mixed plans. Shawnee Maguire is doing very well at Preston at the moment as well. He's become a bit of a forgotten man. And if you think when we started off the campaign at the start of the year, Shawnee led the line. So I think it's a big opportunity for Shawnee as well. His club form is good, so he'll be hoping for a good performance tonight. So there's plenty on offer for the lads, and hopefully everybody can get behind him and they can go out and put in a good performance.
There's so much talk about Troy Parrott, Kenny, and we had a text in 251552. Why are the media putting so much pressure on a 17-year-old? He's not exactly Ronaldo, and he will never score goals for Ireland as long as we have the current midfield on the pitch. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, what a downer.
That's a harsh man.
I like to keep it real.
No, I don't know if there is a huge amount of pressure on Troy. I'm really excited seeing him play this evening. I mean, I'm so enthusiastic and optimistic about the future. The number of the talent that we have, young talent coming through. Leo Connor probably hasn't got too much to mention this week. I've worked with Leo a couple of years ago. He's a fine talent. Really looking forward to seeing him play. But I hope there's that amount of pressure isn't on Troy's shoulders, and I hope he's not feeling it. From what I've seen him play, he's clearly a very talented individual. I hope we can get away from this argument, though. He's not Robbie Keane. Is he going to score as many goals as Robbie Keane? Every centre forward that comes into the squad seems to have that kind of baggage thrown at them. So, hopefully the manager will give him the freedom tonight to go, just to go and express himself. Hopefully he'll have some creativity around him this evening. There's certainly not a lack of creativity in the team tonight. Jack Ford in particular, I know Alan's a huge fan of his. That's exactly what he'll bring to the game in terms of the ability he's got to play in the half turn and find Troy Parrott high up the pitch. Robbie Brady as well with his delivery, and Josh Cullen as well, probably another player hasn't got a huge amount of coverage this week, but I liked what I saw of him play against Bulgaria. Looked like a centre. We're so used to pigeonholing centre midfield players, Emery, in terms of, are they a defensive type, are they more offensive, does he score goals, does he defend, what type of midfielder is he? Well, Josh Cullen to me looks like a good all round centre midfielder, in terms of he's got a good defensive mindset, very comfortable in possession as well, and capable of getting into the opposition penalty box as well. So So, yeah, I wouldn't agree with that. I think it's a very pessimistic outlook in terms of the players we have available to us. I think there's some real talent within this Irish squad at the moment, particularly the younger players coming through, and I'm really excited about it.
We can't underestimate the challenge that faces Ireland on Monday against Denmark. Alan mentioned Robbie Brady there, Kenny, as someone who could possibly force his way into Mick McCarthy's plans. Is there anything the likes of Troy Parrott or Jack Byrne or any of the rest of the lads that potentially could score goals could do tonight?
Yeah, I think so, Marie. And I mean, Troy Parrott, it's not just about what he does this evening. Mick will be looking at Troy all week in terms of how he carries himself, how he interacts with the other players. Is he fazed by being in the senior national setup? Some players maybe might kind of maybe go into their shells a little bit. Some young players absolutely love it. They'll actually come out of their shells. They'll get the very best out of them. And Troy may very well be one of those players. And if Mick gets a sense of that during the week, working with him, and we see a flavour of that this evening, well then clearly Troy Parrott, with the absence of Aaron Connolly, puts himself in the frame, if not for a start, but certainly for a role at some stage next Monday.
From what I've heard as well, Marie, by all accounts, he's a very composed individual as well. He takes a lot in his stride. He's obviously, there is a lot of talk and a lot of hype, but I think he shuts a lot of that out. He's fully aware of the talk around him, but I don't think he lets it affect him. He's obviously at a club where the manager will look after him in Pochettino as well and protect him, and I think, to be fair to Mick, he will as well. So I don't think it's a case of feeling if he goes out tonight and scores a couple of goals that all of a sudden we'll be pinning our hopes on him Monday night. But if he was to score a couple of goals, of course there would be a clamour, and I'm sure Mick would want to have him involved maybe Monday night.
Mick won't be afraid to put him in either, Alan. He really won't.
Which is a good thing.
We had his former coach, Darragh O'Riley, from Belvedere on earlier on, and he was singing his praises, and he made the point that he is a really level-headed guy. He leads by example. You know, he's not the most vocal guy, but he'll pop up and say what's important at the right times as well. So there seems to be great endorsements from those that know him best.
Yeah, and I think, to be fair, I heard that interview as well, Marie, and I was actually a former Belvedere player myself, so I know how to look after the young lads down there, and there's been so many that have gone away, but obviously Troy, there's a lot of talk about him at the moment. But I think, to be fair to Troy as well, I wouldn't be pinning everything on him, because you look at the other talent around that under 21 squad at the moment. Obviously Aaron Connolly has broken through at Brighton, so there's a fair bit of pressure maybe could be put on him. You look at Malumbi at the moment, the midfield as well, centre midfield. I think he's a really exciting talent and has a massive future ahead of him also. Kenny mentioned that we're going to see Lee O'Connor here tonight. Look at Gavin Bazuno, the goalkeeper who played obviously today for the 21s because Quevin Kelleher was injured. So there's lots and lots of talent coming through. As I say, there is a lot of talk about Troy at the moment, but I think you could throw that kind of same argument at three or four of the young lads at the moment.
And Kenny, momentum, massive few weeks for us as a country in the squad. Just getting a decent performance tonight and kind of pumping the wheels for everyone in the squad. Yeah. How important is it?
No, it's a good point. Good point, Dunnigan. Because some people make the opposite argument, say, look, it's all about Monday, does it? It's irrespective of what happens this evening. Majority of players who start this evening aren't going to start Monday, so what does this matter? But I think you're right. If that's what you're insinuating, I think it does matter, because I think we've lost a little bit of our momentum, maybe a little bit of that confidence which you had in the early stages of the group. It has been a little bit of dip in terms of the collective form of the team the last couple of games. So I think this game is important in terms of like reversing that kind of downward trend a little bit, gaining that little bit of momentum, kind of self-belief. And in terms of performance, I don't even think it's a case of Dunica, let's just get the result, performance doesn't matter. I've never been a big believer in that. For me, it's almost the opposite. You know, performance leads directly to the results that you want. So good quality performance tonight, good energy, right intensity levels, plenty of goal scoring opportunities, goals, even for the players watching this evening. I think that helps. That puts everybody in the right kind of collective mindset for the game Monday evening.
And Alan, what do we know about New Zealand?
Not a lot, to be honest with you. they haven't played a game in 525 days, but they're managed by a fella who I actually used to play with many moons ago, Danny Hay, a really nice lad as well. So don't be thinking for a moment that even though they haven't played in such a long time that they're coming over here just for a trip away and that they're normally coming over to play against your boys and doing the haka and stuff like that, Dunica. These boys will be well revved up, and they obviously have their own kind of qualification on their mind as well, back in Oceania, the confederation that they play off in as well, to maybe reach a World Cup. They haven't reached one since 2010, so they have their own reasons to obviously put in a good performance tonight, but we're focusing solely obviously on our boys. Obviously there's a lot of talk about the young lads, of course, but I think everybody has an opportunity tonight to put in a good performance, and hopefully, I don't think anyone may play their way into the team for Monday night, but I certainly think they might play their way into the plans for Mick.
And just on Jack Byrne, Alan, I know like getting his first start for Ireland is a huge deal for him, but just in terms of being on that international stage and people looking at him as well, will that be something that might be on his mind tonight?
On Jack's mind or Mick's mind?
Yeah, on Jack's mind.
Yeah, but I think to be fair to Jack as well, he has a bit of a swagger, a bit of an arrogance about him, so which is not a bad thing. That's the way he plays the game as well. He's a confident lad. So I think to be fair to Jack, there was quotes during the week, Marie, that I felt after the cup final and the season that he's had and obviously the talk after the Bulgaria game that there could be the option. Obviously people were looking in for him across the water and that maybe somebody make a move for him. But I was really encouraged by the comments he came out with during the week and said he's really, really happy with Shamrock Rovers. It's been one of the biggest years he's had in his career so far. He's very settled at home. His home life is very good back in Dublin as well. And he's already achieved getting into the Ireland squad on the back of playing here. So I don't think he feels any reason as though he has to leave just now. And I think it's a good thing for him that he'd play another year here at Shamrock Rovers, because he's still young enough, and then maybe go across the water if that's what he wants to do. But the fact that he's very happy and that he's very settled here in Dublin, I think that's reflecting in his performances as well that he's putting in, both for his club and obviously now at international level.
Kenny, how important is that? Well, how good is that to see one of our own, one of the Shamrock Rovers boy playing for Ireland? You know, it's great for the league.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I think it's a great compliment to kind of Stephen Bradley and the structures of Shamrock Rovers that Jack feels if he's kind of revelled in the environment out there and is getting the very best out of him. And the League of Ireland indirectly, Dunica, there's been a lot of talk, always traditionally I think in terms of if you reach a certain level, League of Ireland, well you have to make the next step over to England, particularly if you want to make that kind of breakthrough into international setup. Well, there's no way you can break through and press an international manager if you're playing a kind of League of Ireland football. That seemed to be the argument, but it's looking a pretty weak argument at the moment with the strides Jack Byrne's made in the colours of Shamrock Rovers this season. So that'll give a lot of other League of Ireland players encouragement that maybe they don't have to make that jump certainly too early over to England. They can continue their development at League of Ireland level here, and opportunities will present themselves in an international jersey off the back of that.
Lads, give us a prediction before we leave you go. Obviously New Zealand beat Ireland in the rugby 46-14. Do you see it happening like that?
46-14.
Yeah. Troy Parrott, get 45 of them.
I'm going to be confident tonight, and I'm hoping the boys do really well, particularly Jack, obviously the young boys Troy. But I'd also like to see Shawnee Maguire do very well. I'm a big fan of Shawnee as well. He's been very unlucky with injuries. He's having a good season so far with Preston, as I say, this season. They're riding high in the championship, and he's been influential in that as well. So, as I said earlier on, he's almost like the forgotten man. I'd love to see Shawnee do really well tonight and stake a claim for Monday. So, I'm going for 2-0 to Ireland tonight, Dunica.
Well, my only prediction, Dunica, is this designer schnoo that Alan's wearing is going to stay on for the whole evening. He's absolutely loving himself.
Send us a picture,
Kenny, please, will you tweet us a photo of him? I've no doubting it.
Kenny, he'd love me to take a photo of him. That's why I'm not going to take
a photo
of him.
Selfie, would you go away?
Kenny doesn't do the Tweety thing. Kenny has a Nokia 63s.
Tweety point.
Before we leave you go, obviously, would there be a fine? We've seen the Chelsea's fine for dress code. Would you have picked up a fine in your day, or just looking at all the Chelsea ones, what were the most ridiculous fines he came across, lads?
Manny's a fine, Donica, but I wouldn't have had the funds to be paying out the fines that Frank Lampard is asking them to pay. It just goes to show, I suppose, the standards he's setting there and the tight ship. Obviously, they're on huge money, so it's a drop in the ocean for them. But I think it's more important, the message that it's sending out, and the fact that, obviously, you look at the season that they're having. Frank Lampard, he's a huge figure at that club, but I think most of all what I took from that is the standards that he sets. Obviously he was an unbelievable player and he set his own standards on the pitch, but you look at that Chelsea dressing room, a lot of egos in it as well. He's obviously left Giroud out of the whole picture for young Abraham so far this season. So I think the message that I got from that is that he doesn't take any messing, and rightly so.
Yeah, Kenny, did you ever pick up some dodgy fines?
I didn't.
For his clobber, Dunica, definitely.
If I had been a fines for driving old clapped out automobiles, maybe I would have picked up a few of my time. Yeah. I'd like to try an opposite argument, to be honest with you, though. I'd probably disagree, actually. I'd make the opposite argument. I was actually disappointed when I saw the fines that Lampard had introduced to the football club. Because I think if you're trying to create a certain environment at a football club, raise the kind of standards in terms of mutual respect, and let's all take this seriously, we're all heading in the one direction. Surely, and everybody's buying into that, Dunica. Surely there's no need to supplement that with kind of a fine system, you're kind of contradicting yourself. You're saying, right, on one hand you're saying, lads, let's buy into this. Yeah, let's all invest into this. Let's respect each other. We're all going in the same direction. But at the same time, if one of you, like, just slips up, maybe indirectly...
Is that not just common practice everywhere?
Well, it is common practice. It is common practice. I never liked it as a player. I never understood it, to be honest with you. I think it's actually treating players like children. And sometimes it's actually genuine good reason for being late. I remember being on the motorway once and, like, cattle run, there was horses or something running down the motorway. We were stuck on the motor and men 25 about an hour and a half.
You know yourself, Kenny. You give a player.
It might have been Kilock the horses. It might have been Kilock actually coming down your ma's road.
But you give the player an inch to take a mile, like.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. But that's what, if you create the right type of environment. And I'm a huge Frank Lampard fan. I think he's done absolutely fantastically well. I think everybody's bought into it. Why do you need then to say, well, look, if you do step out of line, maybe through no fault of your own, I'm going to club you, we're fine. I don't know how you feel, Dunnicky, but I don't like the taste of that.
Yeah,
it smells right to me.
Absolutely. We used to use the fine money for the Christmas party, but at €20,000 for being late for training, you could have it somewhere like in Vegas. Obviously,
you rugby boys would have done that about an hour and a half. They would have done that. €20,000.
It just goes to show the money they're on as well. Like, yeah.
Forget about the money for me.
That's why they're so high.
Yeah.
Because of the money
that
they're on.
It's the principle for me. I don't like it.
Well, hopefully they do something decent with the money they generate. Give it to charity or something like that. That would be incredible. Lads, enjoy the match. Fingers crossed we have an outstanding one. We'll chat to you soon. 2FM.
Game on. On 2FM. So I've always been fascinated by the topic of motherhood and sport. It's not something we talk about much, but I think we should, so that it becomes a bit more normal. And we're going to do it today. So we are joined in studio by three sports stars and mothers. I'm going to ask you to go around the table and introduce yourselves. I'll start with you, Dunica.
I'm Dunica O'Callaghan. I used to play rugby, but I'm a proud father of Sophie O'Callaghan, Anna, Robin and Jake. They're 9, 7, 6 and 4.
Hi, I'm Katie Walsh and I'm the proud mother of Stevie O'Sullivan, actually she is, and she is just 9 weeks old.
And of course, you used to be a jockey.
I used to be a jockey. Retired back in May last year.
My name is Ashling Sullivan and I'm a basketball player for Swords Thunder. I used to play for DC Mercy and I'm a proud mother of Michael Bonaparte, who's 2.5 years old.
Brilliant. And Anne?
I'm Anne Dalton. I play with Kilkenny, Camogie with Kilkenny. I'm a proud mother of 3, Tyke, who's 15 months, and Ada and Sean Dalton, who are 2 weeks old.
Ooh, 2 weeks.
I win.
You win.
Absolutely.
I win.
Everyone's face there just went, ouch, yeah, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is.
So, as I said in the intro, and also I have 3 boys, Timmy, Billy and Davey. And
ages?
3, 5 and 7.
Oh, well wrapped off.
So they're grand now, actually, thankfully.
I've met them. They're lunatics.
Yeah, they are. I'd take that age, though, over newborns any day. So, as I said in the intro, I've always been fascinated by the topic of motherhood and sport, and I don't think we talk about it enough. We're starting to talk about it a little bit more, and as we see more and more sports stars deciding to have kids, having kids and going back and playing, keeping playing while they're pregnant. It's just a little bit more in the public conscious, I think. So we decided we would bring some Irish sports stars in to have a chat about their experiences. And Katie, I'm going to start with you because you'd mentioned you retired in May and you have a newborn baby. So did you decide, was it a plan that you made that you were going to have the baby, or did it all just happen?
It was a plan. I decided, and kind of always when I was riding, I was riding, and I'd never really wanted to try and have a family while I was still doing what I was doing. So I had a couple of conversations with Ross and I just kind of decided, I kind of used to put it off a bit. I used to push it along a bit further and go, I might hang on a bit longer. And I loved it. I loved race riding and I had a great career, but obviously I wanted to start a family. So that season I was 33 and I just decided that I'd like to start. So at the end of that season, Punchestown, I retired in hope of starting a family. Obviously nothing was a guarantee, so thankfully enough Stevie arrived only September just gone. So but it was there's no guarantees it was all going to happen or going to go that way, but for me I just felt that horse racing is a very busy industry, as all sports are, and it's very time consuming and it's hard, and I just was busy doing that, and I was very much focused on that, and you know, I mean, if the shoe was on the other foot and I was male, I probably would have already have a couple of kids already and would probably still be race riding. That's the reality of it. But in the game that I was in, it's different responsibilities. And if you told me now I had to go out and, I can only speak for myself, I can't speak for other women within the industry, but it's dangerous and there's more to think about. It's not just me anymore. And that's, I knew I was going to feel like that. So if I felt it was the right decision for me, and thankfully it's all worked out.
Is there many people in your industry that have kids and then come back, or decide to take a break, to have a family and then come back? Like, is it a family friendly industry in any way?
No, it is. It's definitely family friendly. Nina did it. She has Rosie, and Rosie's two now. She was two in May, so she's two in a couple of months. And she had Rosie, and she came back 6 months later and rode a winner in Ballon Robe 4 or 6 months later. And then she rode mostly on bumpers then on the flat, and she limited herself as to ride over jumps. She rode maybe on the fringe the following season, and then she came back for that full season then, and then the two of us then were walking Punchestown in May the following year, and she said that she was going to, this was her last season, it's the end of the national hunt season, it's Punchestown, and you know, we were walking the track and she said, listen, the end of this week I'm out, I'm going to ride in the Banks race on the Saturday, and I'm going to finish up. And I said I'm the same. I said, I'm kind of come to the end of it. I'd like to start a family, and you know, I've had a great career, and we decided that there was more to life, and she felt she was missing out a bit on Rosie, and it's very much time consuming travelling in the car, and it's maybe different riding on the flat, but there's no guarantees. And listen, you could get hit by a bus in the morning. I'm not saying that you can eliminate that danger, but definitely when you go out riding over jumps and racing, there's a good chance you're going to get a fall. You might get a fall and you might get hurt, and when it's, you've more of the responsibilities, and it was just the right timing for the both of us.
Because they say that about Formula One drivers, yeah, like as soon as they have commitments with families, that they lose that bit of edge.
Yeah, well, I mean, then you have Ruby on the other hand, and he's just recently retired at 40, and he's got four girls, you know, and he definitely, sure, you know him, like, he's as hungry as hell, and yeah, you know what I mean? He definitely didn't lose his edge, but I felt, for being a mother, that it's maybe a different relationship from a mother to a daughter, maybe to a father to a son or a daughter. I just felt that for me, and I can't speak for anyone else, I can only speak for myself, but for me, I didn't want to be going out there doing that. That part of my life was over, and this was the new part, and I just wanted to eliminate that end of it.
Aisling, what about you? I know your partner plays basketball as well, so there was two of you into sport playing at a very high level, and a baby then came into the mix. Was it a decision that you made?
Yeah, well, before I met my partner, you know, I probably didn't want to have kids till I probably was in my 30s. And then when I met Mike, like, he wanted to always have kids kind of younger and to be able to play the sport with them, and, you know, your body to be able to play with them. So then I kind of had to make a decision, you know, wasn't I going to have them earlier on? And I think that was probably one of the hard decisions for me. And I don't think men understand that a little bit more, that, you know, it will take me time I always wanted to get back playing after I had Michael, but ultimately making the decision to get pregnant was probably a hard one as well, but then obviously I'm delighted I made the decision, and, you know, in my mind I knew I was 100% going to get back playing at whatever level, but I was determined to do it. But yeah, like, in our household, like, you know, the two of us are playing at the high level, and, you know, trainings are, you know, initially I was playing for DCU when I came back after Michael, and, you know, I was Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Mike was Tuesday, Thursday, then I was home game Sunday, he was a home game Saturday, so the whole week was, like, consumed by it. But I mean, we wanted that, you know, as in, we didn't want to stop playing, and, you know, we were happy to do it and to organise it all. So I wouldn't have it any other way, because it was nice to have, you know, Michael there when we both won National Cup together, and it's something special to have forever, you know.
And I know Tadhg arrived in the middle of the championship for you. Was that hard?
Yeah, so he arrived about 2 weeks before our All-Ireland semi-final last year, and I can't remember it being hard. I suppose my wife, Karen, she would have played with Waterford for a good few years before she retired. So she understands the commitment required, and I suppose, you know, the choices you have to make with recovery and food and sleeping. So she'd be a massive support to me, and she wants me to do the best I can when it comes to Camogie. So I can just remember, I suppose, flying high, and I think that actually, you know, helped me with my Camogie for the last 6 to 8 weeks before we finished up the championship. So I honestly can't remember it being tough. I can just remember it being a good time, but that could be tinted glasses at this stage, maybe.
Just for me, like, I always find it interesting. Did you feel motherhood changed your outlook on, you know, your sport even? Like, I get a kick out of my own wife, Jenny. We used to go out for dinner, and if the meal was really bad, we'd both kind of go, this is really bad. But if someone came to the table, we'd be there like, is everything okay? We'd be like, oh, thanks a million, you know, and then like we'd kind of pay the bill and just slate the place and never go back there. But as soon as she became a mom, when she walked in there, it was like, we need a baby bolt here in 7 minutes, you know. And like, I was there, Jen, are you in there? Did you find that with your kind of kids and with your sport that, you know, you nearly changed as a person?
Yeah.
Go on, Anne.
It did change me from a point of view of, I probably went harder in training because I was like, if I'm choosing to be here, I am giving it everything. I'm not going to waste the session. If I'm going to do a gym session at home for 20 minutes, I'm going to do it properly, as opposed to maybe before you could have done 10 minutes and then picked up your phone, changed the song, and then gone back and done another 10, 15 minutes. Whereas now I'm like, when I'm there and that's it. So that you can enjoy the time at home, your off time with them. So if you're going to choose to be away from the family, it made me focus more. I suppose that's the change. As well as that, I think it makes you kind of put a bit of perspective on a lot of things in life, not just sports. Like during the Rugby World Cup a few weeks ago, my wife Karen sent me on a quote from Keith Earls, and it was before they played New Zealand, and it was him saying that he's going to prepare to the best of his ability. And if they win, they'll make it into the history books. And if they don't, he'll go home to his wife and family and everyone's healthy. And I think that's a massive, to me, that really hit home with me. You know, you want to win. It's devastating when you don't. You want to do well. But at the end of the day, when your family is healthy, isn't that the most important thing in life?
Absolutely, and that's so well said. I know from my point of view, my husband was playing Gaelic football, and when we had our first baby and I had to go back to work, and he was off for the summer because he was a teacher, and I came home one day and he had taken apart the dining area of the kitchen. The kitchen table was gone and there was a bench press and weights, and he just did all his gym work at home, and it was actually grand. But he was in there doing sessions while the baby was asleep. You just find a way to make things work as well, I think. Ashling, just in terms of physically, right, so you came back and you got to the top level, and with DCU Mercy, just did it take a bit of time to get back to that level again?
Yeah, I think when you're pregnant, or when I was pregnant, I was like, oh yeah, I'll get back to that level, no problem. But then in reality, when it does happen, you're like, oh, it takes a lot of time. But you know deep down that you can get there, but it does take a lot more effort. And as you said, like your husband, you know, working out at home, like getting to the gym or going to do extra shots up wasn't a no-no for me, because the extra moments or the free time that you had was either having a nap because you're exhausted, or, you know, cleaning the dirty house because no one else has cleaned it or whatever. But I was even just saying to Katie beforehand, like, you know, the younger girls are now coming in and it's great that they are, but you kind of realise like, oh, you've lost your speed a little bit, and maybe it's something that you're not going to get back. But obviously you just have to find alternative ways in your game, you know, to be kind of smart and to win out components and stuff like that. But yeah, it's definitely a challenge. But I mean, there's so many people out there that are still doing it and they're doing a really good job at it, you know.
Katie, are you back on the horse yet?
I am.
You would be.
Yeah, no, I had to. I had, obviously, I had stopped riding out, and it would be a huge part of our lives. You know, we're always riding out, you know, 5 or 6 lots every day. That's just the way the business is. And, you know, then to, obviously, I was delighted to get pregnant, and then, you know, I stopped riding out for a certain amount of time. But then it was, as soon as Stevie arrived, I was booking and squealing, I was ready to go. And about 2 weeks later, I felt great. And I didn't do it because I had to do it. I did it because I wanted to do it. It was a part of my life that I loved, that I missed, and I wanted to go. So I went out to the yard, and I got a nice quiet one, and I rode out and I loved it, and it felt great, and I didn't forget how to do it, which was great, thank God. And yeah, it felt super, and it's great for the head, you know. It was great for me. It was something I'm so used to doing, and I wanted to get back at it as soon as I could, and it felt like the right thing to do, but could only do all that with great help. And great help is a granny. She has a great granny at home, two of them in fact, and you know, it wouldn't be possible without them.
And you touched on that there, just the support. So now you have three small children, like you have three babies realistically, and you know, we're in November now, we know that it's time to go back pre-season training for teams again. How important is it going to be now for you to have your partner there to wave you off in the evening and let you know that it's okay?
Yeah, so like as Carol was saying there, the support of the family, like parents and family will be massive support to us in relation to, I suppose, helping Karen out at this time. And when matches are on, that maybe they can take the kids so Karen can come and watch the games. My parents are only 20 minutes down the road, so, you know, their support there as well. I think it's to have the peace of mind that you can walk out the door and everything will be okay, knowing that they are being minded and everything will be okay. And even to be fair to the Camogie community, and especially Kilkenny, the retired players, when Karen was, let's say, heavily pregnant over the summer at my game, there was players there that would have played years ago that would go to her and help her with Tyke during the game because she would have been tired. And, you know, that helped me because it would take the worry away from you during the game or before a game, kind of maybe stressing a bit, like, is she going to be okay? She's going to be standing there for 2 hours with him. Whereas I knew those girls would be there to help her out. So it's not even from family. It's the Camogie community as well have been massive support to us.
And what about the sleep, Anne?
The sleep? at the moment, the sleep is limited. They're not bad. We have Sean on a good routine now. We're getting 5 hours out of him in a slot at night time for a two-week-old. It's brilliant, I think. Ada is waking every 3 hours. Sometimes we'll get a four-hour slot out of her. But they're 2 weeks old, you know, so hopefully in 6 to 8 weeks we'll be getting the full nights out of them. That's the plan. But, you know, whether that goes to plan is another thing.
Tullica, you look terrified.
No, I know I'm well out of my depth in this room, no doubt. But I'm interested, Aisling, like, sport is our identity as well. It's who we are as people. And like at home, you can be mom and dad, but that's where you can be Aisling, isn't it? Did you find that when you got back in that it was so important for you just to be playing your sport again?
Yeah, I 100% agree. As in, when I had Michael, you know, he was born in May, so I kind of had the summer without basketball. So I, you know, got to enjoy being with him and stuff like that. But then deep down in my mind, I was like, I can't wait for August or pre-season, you know, September to get back to being normal Aisling again, the way I used to be, you know, going to the gym and playing basketball. And it is it's your identity. Like, I've played basketball since I was 10 years old and that's really all I know, and it is my life. And I know it will be my life for the rest, you know, in the future and stuff like that. So it is really important. And it's kind of, even to have that, you know, 2 hour session on an evening to get out there and just to not think about anything else, just to play your sport. And I think it's good for your mind as well. So, you know, that was really important for me to know that I could still do that. And I, like you're saying with the support, I mean, myself and our household, we could not play if we didn't have the support of everybody around us, like the amount of babysitting that we require from people. Like, and again, like even Anne said, it's the community of your basketball community helping you out. Like when I go to a game, everybody helps us out and minds Michael and stuff like that. So I'm really appreciative of it all.
The one thing that I found, I play football, is that I think, for me anyway, you can have work and you can have your hobby and you can have your family, but I couldn't find a way to fit in any social life. So it was like my hobby was my social life, because if Billy was going off playing football and I was going off to play soccer and we had to get a babysitter, we were always saving them for our hobbies. So I don't think we've been out since.
Same here, yeah.
Did you find the same?
Yeah, you're saving, like, you don't want to be asking people every weekend to be babysitting and the same people again. So we used to, like, right, you've a game here, I have a game here, so we'll keep that person for that weekend or whatever, you know. So yeah, social life is out the window pretty much. It's going to your training session or your basketball game is your social life.
Kate, did you find that people's attitude to you has changed? We'll say, like, if you're now riding out, like, does everyone treat you the same?
Yeah, everyone. I was pretty much the same as what I always was, you know, but yeah, they definitely would. We, along with Dad training race horses, we buy and trade a lot of young horses as well, so it's just kind of part of the business. And it's nice to be out there, it's nice to be back in the mix, and it's good for me, it's good for my head to be back in it. I wouldn't want to be at home. Ross has gone to work, he trains race horses as well, he's gone to Clonmel, and that's what has to be done. You know, life has to go on, and I think it's important that life does go on once everyone is healthy and well and fit and healthy and able to do it. I wouldn't want to be any other way.
It's because everyone's afraid of Ted and Ruby. They've never crossed you.
Not at all. No, definitely not. No, no. I think we have great staff at home, thank God, and they do a great job. But it's, you know, with racehorses, people, they do it for the passion and the love of it. So when you go to ride out, everyone is there because they love being there, thank God.
Would you have coped, Donegal, if you had to... have you had to have children?
No, no chance. I barely made it through the whole labour process once. I foolishly, when Jenny went into labour, said this is exactly like pre-season and we'll get through it. And I bawled my eyes out afterwards saying, I'm so sorry for comparing that to pre-season. It's nothing like it in my life. So I have a theory that if men had to give birth, there'd be one baby born ever and we'd still speak about that. So, but Anne, I'm interested in what you were saying about the sleepless nights and the fitness elements that come with stuff. I suppose you get used to certain, you know, routines. But when that, you know, when you have to make the sacrifices of family, how do you try to get the perfect performance again?
I think you have to be in tune with your body in the sense that if you are tired, you have to just accept today is a rest day. Even if it's scheduled in for a gym session or a running session, you just have to accept. And I suppose I'm in my 30s now, so I really have to be careful because obviously the older you get, the more prone to injury you are. So you have to accept that if I push it the way, if I do the same to the same extent as, let's say, an 18-year-old, and I'm not sleeping at night, I'm increasing the risk of injury. And sometimes you have to just accept what your body's capable of and maybe accept it's better off skipping a session today and sleeping properly tonight and catching up tomorrow, even though, let's say, an 18 or 19-year-old isn't skipping that session. And I think Aisling was saying it there about losing the speed and young players coming along and they're fast. And you have to adapt. I suppose the older you get, you need to get smarter on a pitch or on a court, because when your speed goes, it goes, and there's not much you can do about that. So I think when it comes to, let's say, lack of sleep, you just have to trust your instinct, trust your body, and accept that maybe it's okay to miss a session here or there so that you can go hell for leather 100% the following day.
Aisling, do you find that pregnancy in sport and or going off and having a baby and coming back, it's still a bit of a taboo, like it's not done that often?
Yeah, I still think that there's maybe like a stigma around it, you know, that maybe once you have your child, that's it really, you shouldn't be playing sport anymore, you know, you should maybe stay at home and or, you know, work or whatever and look after the child. But like, I'd like to think that maybe we're gradually starting to change and get out of that. Now, I know there'll always still be people's opinions regarding that, but like when I was pregnant with Michael, I played up to 4 months, and like I probably played some of my best basketball. So I can't maybe talk from that point of view that I didn't. But yeah, like it's unfortunate maybe that people look at it like that. But I think, like as maybe Anne was saying there, you need to kind of be in tune with your body, that you know your limits, you know how far you can go and at what point maybe to stop. And, you know, when if you do go back, then, you know, you just have to plan it all really and be organised and kind of listen to what people around you are saying, maybe regarding kind of your fitness or, you know, even if a doctor maybe is talking to you and stuff like that. But yeah, I do hope that it will change in the future, because I don't think there's anything wrong with women coming back to sport.
We do see pictures as well of people running races and playing soccer while pregnant, like, you know, quite far along once they've been in touch with their doctor. Katie, for you with the horse, was that something that you were able to do or you wanted to do?
Yeah, no, I was kind of, my doctor said once I felt well that being pregnant was the most natural thing in the world. I mean, obviously, you know, as regards the riding out end of things, I went maybe for about 4 months, and then I decided then the start of the summer came round, and that was it, kind of June, then I stopped. And your body tells you, really, you know what I mean, once you listen, it's the most important thing. Anne was just saying about sleep, it's so important. I mean, if you don't get sleep, nothing works, you know. So your body kind of tells you when you're doing something right or doing something wrong. And I stopped in June, but I was still outside. I mean, I didn't come in and perch up and watch Home and Away. And you know, it was nice to keep active. I think if you're from that mentality of being fit and being active, to just stop is just so wrong. It doesn't feel right mentally or physically. So for me, I kept going right up really until I basically went in. I was in the yard and I felt great, and was in the yard every day being part of that, and not riding out, but definitely tacking up horses, putting them on and off the walker, getting stuff done. And that was important for me physically and mentally. And there is actually a girl, Liz Lawler, she had a baby recently enough and she came back 8 weeks later and rode a winner over fences as well. So that's someone else within our industry who came back. I just forgot to mention her. I said I better mention her.
And just recently, I suppose, this topic has been hitting the headlines quite a bit because of what was going on with Nike and Alison Felix and Alicia Montano. Have you found, or do you think that we need to kind of go through these processes, as in things be highlighted for people's attitude to be better? I know in Australia they seem to be leading the way in professional sport and giving maternity leave to some of their professional athletes. Are things getting better? Are we making enough progress, do you think, Anne?
Well, I suppose it's not. It's different with camogie, and from the background I'm coming from. Just two girls I know who came back, Bridge Corkery from Cork and Sarah Carey from Limerick, who came back and are playing camogie after having kids. And as far as I can see, both of them are competing and are doing great. I suppose from in other sports where, you know, they, let's say they're playing at a professional level and there is that aspect of maternity leave. Absolutely. If you're playing sports and it's your job, then you should be getting all the entitlements than anyone that anyone else in any other career is getting. Whether we're promoting it enough, probably not, because maybe there's still that stigma of, well, a woman's place is at home with her kids, and maybe we need to push it further so that, you know, if female athletes or sports people want to go back playing, well, that's their choice. And, you know, that it's up to each family and each household to decide what they want to do. I think we probably need to push it more to the point of view of, as long as no one is hurting anyone, then why can't people do what they want in relation to going back into the sporting field?
I think as well it's important to highlight, Aisling, that you can get back to the top level as well. Like, you can go out and run personal bests and, you know, score goals in World Cups and do whatever you were doing before as well.
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, the person will know themselves what they need to do to get back there. And I mean, I think someone who actually as well wants to get back there knows what they need to commit, or, you know, to do or commit to get to that level. And if they're willing to do it, again, I agree with Anne that it's up to that's their business whether they want to do it or not, that nobody else should really have an opinion on it, although I know people will.
Especially in Ireland. Yeah.
Definitely not. I think I certainly would never judge anybody in sport or in business. That is completely no one else's business. If someone wants to go back to work or someone wants to go back training and doing their job and doing something that they love and they're passionate and they're good at, I think it's a great example to younger people. It's a great example to kids. I think if you want to take your 6 months, take it. But if you don't want to take your 6 months and you want to get back to work, well, fair play to you, go back to work. But I don't think anyone has the right to judge anybody in that regard. Absolutely not.
And I interviewed Vinnie Corey before, and I've told this story actually a couple of times, but he plays for Monaghan and he's three kids. And I remember asking him, you know, you've the sacrifices, you're leaving the kids, you're going off training. And he said to me, I don't look at it like that at all. He said that the way he looks at it is he's setting such a good example for them. He's not sitting on the couch every evening watching television. He's going out, he's doing something, he's contributing to something that's bigger than just himself and his family. Like, he's contributing to Monaghan football and trying to do something great for the whole community.
Yeah, like, if there's one thing I want to pass on to my kids, it's to work hard for whatever passion they have or they find. Whether that's sports, I'd love if it was sports, but if it's not sports, if it's art or music or anything, if they just go out and give it their all, and if they fail at what they're doing, like I have done plenty of times and I'm still alive, then so be it. But if they can walk away and say, I tried my best, absolutely, that's what I want to pass on to them. So I could... Let's say when Tig was born last year, I could have given up and I could have said, right, that's it. I'm staying at home. My family is all I'm going to do, bar work. But I think it actually helps him, and hopefully the twins, if I go back playing next year, to get out to pitches, get out and meet the people at matches, you know, and let's say socialise in the GAA community. It absolutely does. And in a few years' time, when we all sit down and watch videos of me playing and make fun of all the mistakes I make, that they hopefully will look at it and think, well, she's on a pitch and she's making mistakes and it's fine. Every life moved on. And hopefully that will make them realise, if they play sports, that let's say in a minute they make a mistake, they say, it's okay, the game goes on. You know, if you can pass that, to take away that fear of failure from them, that's what I hope, I'm hoping to pass on.
Ashling, moms can feel guilty though, can't they? You know, and when it comes to men, it's all right to put it down as sacrifices, but there's a guilt element when we, for the mom competing.
Yeah, I do agree to a certain extent. Like for me, you know, I was leaving, in the evening times to go train and stuff like that. But I mean, once I knew that he was always with someone that I trusted and stuff like that, and he was being looked after, I didn't really feel so guilty about it. But I mean, like when you're going away, say for an away game, which is like over up in Donegal or down in Cork, and you're pretty much gone for the whole day, and you see them crying at the door, like waving you off, and so you do feel a little bit of guilt. But you know that you're going to come back to them, and you know whether I win or lose or had a bad performance, I'll come back to him, and he's happy, and he's going to smile and hug me, and life will go on, and you'll be, and everything's good, you know. So I mean, yeah, there's a small element of guilt, but at the end of the day, you still know that for yourself and mentally, you need to have that little bit of an outlet to kind of be yourself as well.
Do you know what I love? I love when my kids say, Mom, must be time for you to go back training now soon. But it, I love that they think it's completely normal for their mother to be out playing football. So the women's sport is kind of seeping into them as well at an early age, that it's something that women do. And, you know, they don't look at what I do or what my husband does any differently. It's just what we do.
No, I agree with you. Like even when my partner's going off to train, he's like, oh, daddy going to play basketball now. Daddy going coaching. Like, so he knows the routine as well. Like he will know what, like every, if it's every evening or the weekends, and he knows, he's like, am I going too? Like, no, not tonight. Or, you know, so they're even getting like a grasp of the things as well.
And Ashton, you had that lovely story where you both won in the same time and got so much coverage for it.
Yeah, I mean, I was blown away, to be honest, by all of that. I mean, for as long as I played basketball and as a child, all you wanted to do was win a national cup, like a senior level. And I had tried many times before that and I'd lost. So like, and it was devastating. But, you know, the two of us being in the final that weekend and both winning, like it really was a dream come true. And for Michael to be there to experience it. And, you know, the coverage was unbelievable that we got. So, you know, it's going to be really nice when he's older to sit down and have a look at all that.
Absolutely. And Katie, if anybody was thinking of following in your footsteps, which I'm sure they will be at some stage, would you have any advice for young women who are thinking about starting families but want to keep their career in racing as well? What would you say to them?
I'd say do whatever you feel is right. I think everyone's their own person to make up their own decisions. But just the one thing with racing is that it just, for women within racing, there's a danger element that isn't in a lot of other sports, and you know, it's just that has a huge factor to it. And I think with women kind of in our industry at the minute, there's only really is a couple of them, but I feel that most of them will probably be trying to start a family towards the end of their career anyway. You know, I don't think it is, but definitely if someone was to have a family younger in racing, there's nothing wrong with coming back at it. But mentally, I think that for with the race riding and the danger side of it, that's what affects people more so than they love the game and they love the sport. And I'd love to be doing it if there wasn't danger involved. But the fact that there is, there's just more responsibilities now. And it's something that that for me, I wouldn't like to go back at. But racing's the greatest sport in the world, I think, and great enjoyment and great days. I remember ringing Ruby actually after Stevie was born, and we were chatting, and I said I thought riding winners was brilliant. I mean, having a child was the best feeling. I mean, I don't know about anyone else, but my greatest achievement is her all day long.
And what about you? Any advice for anyone who's thinking of following in your footsteps?
The same as Katie there. If you want to do it, just do it. You know, I think you were saying earlier that if someone wants to get back to the top, they can. And I absolutely agree with that. I think it will always be mind over matter and discipline and commitment. And if you're prepared to give in the discipline or commitment, you know, people are capable of amazing things. So if you want to start a family while still playing, obviously you'll have to take time out. But if you want to go back, absolutely do it.
And Ashling?
Oh yeah, I mean, just backing up everything else what the girls have said. I mean, even if you look at the likes of Serena Williams, I know she might have a lot more resources than all of us and stuff like that, but I mean, she's got back to, and she might not have won that championship that she needs to get the certain number or whatever of championships. But I mean, she's still doing unbelievable, and she's at the elite of the elite, you know. So it is down to mind over matter. If you put the hard work in, and everyone knows that hard work always pays off.
Great. And before we let you all go, Katie, are we seeing the real Ruby on Game On?
Definitely, more so in the last couple of weeks. Just has to give him plenty of stick.
Katie,
give him plenty. Donica, get stuck into him.
How do I handle him? I can't handle him.
You think you see he's been sneaky and smart? Just get on top of him.
No, he's certainly not sneaky. He gives it to me right between the eyes. In fact, I wish he was sneaky.
You have to see it coming. Just see it coming and nip it. Just give him loads of abuse. Loads of abuse.
Absolutely. Well, Aisling, Katie, and Anne, thanks very much. It's great we're having this conversation. It's great that there might be someone in the car, a mom or someone that's thinking about their family or planning in the future, and they can hear examples. And
or heading to training, Donica.
Or heading to training and hear role models like you chatting and starting the conversation. Thanks for joining us on Game On.
Thank you.
Thank you.
FM.
Text 51552.
Game On. Weekdays from 6.
Welcome back to Game On with Marie and Donica. There is just over 12 minutes gone in the Republic of Ireland's friendly against New Zealand. John Kenny is standing by at the Aviva Stadium. John, what's it been like so far?
Well, you're a football woman, so you'd appreciate it's pleasant on the eye. Oh, woo! Derek Williams coming in from the back post and just shoots wide. It's been terrific stuff from the Republic of Ireland. It has to be said in the context of New Zealand, who haven't played together for 18 months. But Jack Byrne in particular, pulling the strings in midfield, and his distribution has been absolutely fantastic. It's really good to see this. Some really nice passing from the Republic of Ireland, trying to work the ball out from the back. And so far, even though we haven't had a goal in this game at 13 minutes in, we have had the ball in the net, though. Robbie Brady did have the ball in the back of the New Zealand net, but that goal was ruled out for offside. But from what we've seen in the first 13 minutes of the game, yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah, John, it could tend to be disjointed, making so many changes, putting a new group together, but it's flown incredibly well.
It is, yeah. Robbie Brady is captaining the side tonight, and he seems to have quite a big influence, influence on the side than perhaps some of the more inexperienced player. But Jack Byrne has been absolutely terrific as he dinks another one in towards the penalty spot, demanding the ball all the time, which is great to see. Some players, you know, some can run away from the ball and hide, but Jack Byrne is certainly not one of those players. We interviewed him yesterday, and it was interesting to hear some of the comments that he actually gets more kick out of an assist, really, than scoring goals. It's like a goalkeeper making a save. Everyone's got their own priorities. But Jack Byrne, in particular, just looks like a class international footballer. As I said, we have to put this in context. This is a New Zealand team that haven't played together for 18 months, but I'm liking what I'm seeing here.
Absolutely. Hopefully we keep it going. Thanks very much, Sean.
That is all we have time for on Game On tonight. Tara Stewart is up next.